Seems like nowadays, everyone's got their hand out asking for something for free. You want to get yourself D-Sports Bet, mate? You know they give away 600 DJT free every day just for logging in.
What?
My apologies. I just assumed because you're made out of silver and you can't move, that you wouldn't have any real crypto. If you do in fact have real crypto, apparently it's loaded. You want to just go and use the first time deposit bonus, 50% or up to 100 USDT. What? Apparently he knows all about eSports, but he even says not to forget to say about the watch to earn scheme where you can get 1% back on your bets on eSports Bet. Yeah, I know, but eSports Bet.io, anyway, this guy, he won't shut up. eSports Bet.io.
Sports psychology and work ethic are terms thrown around without anyone unpacking them and looking at what we mean by those particular terms when we use them as shorthand, as terminology. So to me, sports psychology, the way I see most people apply that term, is treated as some like panacea, cure all to any mental problem someone might be going through in their life or their career. And supposedly you just go to them and then they fix it. They come. It's like a very, very reductive way of thinking about it. Even though in some places, when we're talking about sports psychology for choking, sometimes it isn't even that like they did absurdly badly or mega underperformed. Sometimes their real problem is that they just aren't as clutch as the greatest clutch players and performers of all time. Okay, that could be a problem, but you can see how it's not as simple as thinking you just go to somebody, your brain's broken, and they fix it. Similarly, with work ethic, I think in the modern day, work ethic actually has become maligned as like hustle culture or burnout or something. Like, what's so mad about that is, I don't think it's actually like even understood what the role of these things in the industry is. Like, when is it appropriate or what role can sports psychology play? To what degree is work ethic important? At what is too much work ethic? What should we even expect from pros? These are the questions to ask, right? So in terms of why it's so significant, these sort of mental aspects of the game, because in physical sports, the teams just won't even let you practice too much. Like, unless you're some Kobe figure who's just the best, and then their logic is like, okay, he's sort of allowed special consideration. Famously, like certain sports, like in basketball, I remember there was a story where Radmanovic back in the day for the Lakers in the 2000s got fined and punished because it was found that during the off season he'd gone and secretly gone snowboarding, which they aren't allowed to do in case you break your leg or something, in which case you've wrecked that whole year that you're under contract to play basketball for the Lakers. So they're very, very careful what you can do, what activities you can do, about over practicing, over training, etc. Because let's be real, they look at these players as assets. They look at someone whose time they're leasing and they want to get the most out of that, and they want as much fame from it as an org, and they want all the tickets and people to put bums in seats, and then they want people to buy merchandise, they want people to cheer for their team, and they want their team to succeed. They don't really do it because they care about you and the strength of your body as the athlete, but there's a reason why, luckily, their interests align with your own personal health interests in this particular case, because you can overwork things and get injured, right? But in esports, what's essentially a sport of the mind to some degree, no one knows the limits. No one really knows what the limits of the mind are, or if it's consistent from person to person or different nationalities and culture. No one really knows. I mean, you could argue Korea and China are doing their best to test those limits, but we don't really know what is too much. Neither do they, quite frankly. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I've often pointed out that it can't just be about raw amount of time you practice, because I actually was of the opinion from a long time ago that just team house approach and putting everyone in one house burns people out because they can't handle each other anymore. The stress increases, there's nowhere to get away, you can't escape, you feel like you're just in a steel cage death match. I've made all those points before, so that shows that it can't just be practice, and it can't just be your mental health that decides if you're burned out, if you've practiced too much, what is too much practice. So when it comes to sports psychology, my position's simple. If you have serious issues or concerns as it pertains to being a competitor in any context, it probably doesn't hurt to try. That would be what I would say. So I'd say normally give it a go. Remember, we're not talking about like Freudian psychoanalysis or Jungian psychoanalysis where, like, you know, some people get better, some people stay the same, some people get worse. So, you know, watch out. Maybe you'll be the one who gets worse. No, we're talking essentially about having a support network or someone you can go and talk to privately, who you can just even experience like being able to verbalize what's going on yourself and have to think, how would I explain what I'm thinking right now? So that'll help you understand yourself. Having someone who has some techniques, simple anchoring techniques before a game, so you can take your mind into a different place, so you can remove yourself from feeling upset or uncomfortable. You can do all sorts of little things like that that can help help you. Quite frankly, just having someone that can relay stories to you of other competitors or great champions that themselves went through some things or analogize. This is like another situation in life. And if we do this and we overcome it, it'll show our courage that yes, even though we're afraid, we take the battle head on. Whatever it might be, people who can talk to you in that way. Hopefully in this case, maybe they have some life experience, some sort of age gap, so that they sort of seem like someone who can take on a mentor role for some degree. Let's be real. It is not a magical cure. And you've seen that in esports. I've always made this joke. Everyone credited that Finnish woman who was a sports psychologist for Astralis for helping them win their first major. And then they ignore that she went and worked with a bunch of teams that never came close to winning anything. And some of them were even serial losers in finals and semis. So if she was the magical cure, then the magic stopped working, didn't it? No, the point is, it was about the person she worked with, whether the techniques made sense for them. Because the key thing you want to understand here, it's so lost in this mix, is when you approach sports psychology as this monolith, and then you act like they're all these perfect avatars of what sports psychology techniques are, applying them in the world. It's just ignorant of reality and what work is like and what a craft or a profession is like. And the fact that some people work on it and get really good, a bit like in esports, some people work a lot. And other people won't work very much and they won't be very good and they might even be like, I've done my job. Oh, that's sounding familiar, isn't it? So you have to remember there are differing levels of sports psychologists, just as there are different levels of player, of team, of competitor, of any job or profession. So there's an evil geniuses of sports psych that's fucking dog shit, irrelevant, overpaid, doesn't do anything it says it will, and just lives off past glories. And there's also a phase of sports psychs, I'm talking using the CSGO analogy here, where they're the best and they have the best and the most of the weapons and they understand what they're doing and they've got veterans and they've got people you trust and they've also got new relevance they've integrated. I'm using a CSGO example. You can obviously use different examples for League of Legends or Valorant or whatever you want. So the point is, there's levels to this game, just like there's levels to everything. And by the way, yes, there are tons of frauds, especially in esports. I mean, some of them weren't even sports psychologists. That's why they had to keep calling themselves sports psychology trainer to avoid literally being sued in court, by the way. So all you need to understand is, of course there are frauds, but that doesn't mean the whole field is fraudulent. I've tried to make this point many times on my side channel. It's actually a natural scenario that when you have something of value and something that works, you will get people who will go, people actually are going to pay for that and that's worth money. So if I can pretend to do that and I can mimic the person who's legit and they can believe me, they'll pay me for that, even though I will rip them off. That's just standard in every field. I mean, you even have those animals that will mimic a predator so that you stay away from them because you're scared, oh my God, that's like some sort of like a bug, but it's actually like a butterfly and that was just on the wings, so then you don't go and attack it. If you're a bird, for example, I mean, that's not a great example because birds eat bugs, but you know what I mean? Like another type of animal that's scared of the bug in this particular sense, or a lizard or whatever it might be. So mimicry actually comes from whatever the original thing is. So there has to be something legit originally. Otherwise, what are you mimicking? What would scare people away? So in the same sense, of course there are non-legit people and of course there are legit people. That's why you go from social proof when you work with any of these people. You look at people who've worked with people where it's seemed to have had an effect. You talk to them, find out, yeah, they were legit in that way. You look into their background or whatever their credentials are, see how legit that are. Maybe they're doing something dodgy and pretending they completed a great degree. Maybe they call themselves a doctor, but from a totally different field where they did a PhD, but has nothing to do with the particular field they're in now. So they get to call themselves doctor, but not doctor of psychology. You get the point of what I'm getting at here. Now, let's be real. Some of the least legit sports psychologists were obviously going to be in esports first out of everyone. It's absolutely obvious. Spoiler, same for lawyers, agents, businessmen, because this was a field, a burgeoning field with a lot of interest and promise and a lot of money starting to flow in, and most people didn't understand the field or what it's about or what's going on and who's good, who's not. No one's checking on everyone's backgrounds and credentials. There are no examples to give the social proof. So if you just seem like you're the most legit one, even if you're full of shit, you could get in. That's been what esports has been for the last 20 years. Let's be real. So now you get a few legit people or people who've stuck around long enough. They've sort of actually almost had like a moment of conscience and actually learned their craft over the years that they've been ripping people off and gotten half decent. So there's another angle. Because people approach this as a monolith of sports psychology, they'll also say stuff like, did you ever try sports psychology? Yeah, I tried it. You know, it wasn't for me. Or like, yeah, I tried it. It was really good. What are you talking about? You tried it. You tried working with one person who hopefully embodies and propagates some of those philosophies and techniques, etc. If it didn't work, maybe that was just someone who wasn't good, or maybe they just didn't vibe with you or fit with you. Try another. Try more than one. Because another thing as well is this idea that you just get a team of chalks, so we just assign the spots coach to the team, they'll sort it out, and then they'll stop chalking. What are you talking about? It's very unlikely all five players chalked in the team. It's very unlikely all five players are going to react to that particular sports psychologist the same way. Here's what I would do. I would provide funding, and I would even recommend that some of these people get individual sports psychology training if the one that with the team doesn't seem like one that vibes with them, that didn't seem to work. I would say, here's the money, go get your own. Go get someone that fits you. That would be a great angle for a team that wants to increase performance, by the way. So understand, it might only work for some players anyway. Maybe for somebody who doesn't work. Maybe their mind is just wired differently. I mean, there's that great Olofmeister line from 2015, right? Where when TSM and the Astralis Corps were choking, Olof had that line where it was just like, I mean, we don't need a sports psychologist because we don't choke or something, or because we just clutch or something, or, you know, something like that. Now, I will say that didn't really age that well, like 3 years later when he was in Fierce Clan, because they definitely did choke like motherfuckers in all but your massive scenarios. Probably should have had the first Grand Slam back then, right? But I get the line. Like, there's a time period when Olofmeister didn't need that. He went into every game and he had the right mindset and he battled correctly. He didn't get down on himself. He didn't seem to have choking issues. He performed at his highest most of the time, win or lose, and he was able to be one of the best players in the world and have a lot of success. Okay, I get it. By the way, just like that Metallic dude I was talking about earlier, remember the 600 DJT for free, logging in each day to the Esports Bet website. You can use those tokens, DJT, to play in competitions like the World's Prediction Series competition, the Spring Variety is up. If you win, you can win real crypto prizes. You can also convert it. Check out the website. Now, in terms of work ethic, here's another thing where people are just so lost at sea, it's ridiculous, and they're not even trying. Like, when you talk about work ethic, I'm talking about working diligently to improve. Now, I'll just leave it there, because I can just put in the work, I can do the hours, I can do it, play the way I should, and then I'll let the chips fall where it may. But let's be real. Sports is a performance business. It's about where you place. Even nowadays, contracts are structured that way. Performance bonuses and how you get all your money from the contract. So quite frankly, it isn't really just that for most people. It's not just working diligently to be improved. It's essentially an arms race against your competitors to see who can practice the most in the hopes that converts into results, which means you win. Now, my issue is how that part's also ignored, even though it's inferred within the concept of esports, especially if you're going to contrast regions, because now it's not just about are we playing correctly, the right way. No, it's about is our region better? Are we better than them? Are we winning? Are they losing? Are we winning? So people talk and they say all these glib statements like, it's about working smarter rather than harder. Right? Everyone who says that, I've never seen them able to do it. I've never seen them able to work less hours, but work so much smarter that they massively outperformed their rivals and all became the best in the world. I've never heard of anyone actually doing that, by the way. I've heard some stories that were like maybe alluded to it, but I've never seen anyone consistently do it and beat the people who just practice and grind like a motherfucker. The grinders are the ones in history are the most successful. Right? All the results bear it out. Now, in terms of the idea of like, we can't burn people out or have unreasonable working hours. Yeah, you can't. If that's your decision, that the number one thing that you care the most about is the mental health and the physical well-being of your competitors. But you know what the problem is? It's sort of implied within sports and esports that that's not the number one goal and never was. I think it's even a dishonest and disingenuous premise. Like when you watch American football, could the number one concern be the physical health of the players? It couldn't, because the sport itself should never play a single down or snap if that is true, because players are getting potentially injured and damaging themselves all the time. So the question instead becomes, what is a byproduct of dedicating yourself to play this particular game? So in terms of if you're an esports boy, you're going to have stress. You're going to have times you feel upset and scared and broken, and times you feel elated and euphoric, and you're going to have all these things. It's going to be part and parcel of the career. So it can't be the idea that you can never feel anything negative, physical or mental. The question becomes, what is too much? And how do we dictate that? I mean, that's part of the problem, right? Because I'll tell you what, when we talk about like, you're burning them out, you're working unreasonable hours, I'll tell you right now, as a general trend, China and Korea don't give a fuck about that. Actively, they don't give a fuck. The logic there goes, they want to win, they're going to practice and work you as hard as they can, and if you can't handle it or you don't want to handle it, get out of the chair. There are thousands of people waiting in line, including academy players, other people on tour, and they'll just bring that guy in tomorrow. He'll sit down, he'll play instead, and he won't complain. So if you want to complain, hit the bricks, get out. Now, you'll notice someone could have come along in the Chinese or Korean system and made this different team house where they were nice to players and they were like, we're going to work smarter rather than harder. And if that was a real thing, and you use sports psychology trainers, which is not a big thing in the East, by the way, they could have used all this and then they could have outperformed everyone and beaten them and win just like you would in business, right? Instead of competing, you go elsewhere, you do your specialist shit that no one else can do as well as you, and you just destroy the whole market, right? You create your own market. No, it's never been done. No one's ever even come close to doing it. What you find is, the people who grind, even to seemingly inhuman levels, mega outperform the Western players and the other teams and players, and so their inputs yield the outputs of their results. You might not like the way they get the results, but they do get those outputs. Now look at the Western system. Our inputs yield our results. Now listen, you're welcome to say maybe there's less players, all the players trying to be professional, or maybe the players just aren't as good in the West. That's a different discussion to have. I'm just saying, all things being equal, if you only look at the way they practice, their practice methods produce better results. It's just, it's not political to say that. It's not expedient, is it? It's not nice to say that people burn out, or to even imply, like, if you don't like it, get out. Yeah, it's not nice. But that's the nature of competition, right? Remember, sports are a proxy for war. And in war, no matter what people tell you about rules and war, in war, you kill the other guy so that he doesn't kill you and yours. That's it. You don't do it all, but in a nice way or a fair way, or like this would be dishonest or this. No. At that point, it's kill or be killed. And so you make sure you're the one who does the killing instead of being killed. You know, that's why those lines are actually like bullshit if you think about it. It's like learned helplessness where they go, I'll die for my country. No, the premise is, will you kill the other guy for yours? That's the winner's mentality. A loser's the one who's like, I'd die for my country, and I died. Like, that's not good. People don't, that's a worst case scenario, right? So then you come to the idea of burnout. Do they even get burned out in the East? Listen, their lives look like they suck, especially their social lives compared to most of the Western pros I know. I get that. But for me, it actually appears to me it's the lack of breaks that kills the career of the Eastern player. Because when they take the breaks, the military service, 6 months out, whatever it might be, they can come back and sometimes be really good again. Or if they have a few months that are out of the lineup, they can come back and be the best again. Uzi Ai comes back almost every year, at least until recently, miss the Chinese Lunar New Year, then come back, play himself in the form, and by the middle of the year, he'd be a beast again. So what's weird is, I actually think a lot of it doesn't even make sense. Like, if you look at the longevity of the legends in the Asian scene, they don't actually seem like they do get ridiculously burned out. I'm sure some other people do, and there's a body count like a motherfucker over there, don't worry about that. But you look in the West, there's a lot of Western players don't have longevity, right? But why? They're practicing less. They've got the sports psychs. They're not being forced to put their nose to the grindstone, as it were, and just grind all day long. No, they're not being forced that. Quite frankly, I think Western players just get bored, not burned out. I think drama is what kills their careers, or just being, oh, this is boring, I don't want to do this every day. I think most of the complaints, by the way, from Western pros about how inhuman the practice schedule is because these are people who've never had a real job. I mean, when they complain about how much time they get to spend with their friends and family, it's like, bro, if you were there all the time, you'd barely see them anyway, because it's only the fact you can dictate to some degree your own hours at times that you're able to see friends and family anyway. Do you know what it's like to work a normal job? There's some people who get 2 weeks off holiday off their job in the whole year, and then they're hoping for bank holidays and special days and Christmas and something. Give me a break. Like, people have gone way too far the other way on this one. I understand the concept of someone being like a slave driver and making you work too much. Yeah, I get that. People are going too far the other way and make it like you should never, ever have, you should just live in luxury princess life where everything's just provided and you're never uncomfortable for 1 second. Because that's why I actually found that whole scenario with what happened with Danny so difficult. Because unless you knew the specifics, which I was able to dig into, of what was going on behind the scenes, and it was cruel and unusual the way they treated him, and people were ignoring warnings and literal pleas for help or asking to stop. When you know all that, yeah, that's way too far. But the idea of just being a pro will make people feel upset, dejected, depressed when they lose. There'll be a lot of stress. There'll be a hard life to do. You'll take a very special type of person. No, that does just go part and parcel with what esports is. Like, it is part of being a pro. Like, being a pro can be a lonely, difficult, very intense job. There will be times where to be the best, you might have to push yourself to uncomfortable levels, just like you will in the gym if you want to get super jacked and swole. If you just want to be in normal shape and have a normal life, go for it. But that's not the equivalent of being a pro. The equivalent of being a pro in this scenario would be being a bodybuilder or being some power lifter, right? So the question I would say, and it's an individual question that should require personal responsibility, would be this. You put a certain level of practice just to be a good pro. That's what you do as a team. Then you provide the sports psych and all the surrounding things. And then you let the player take the personal responsibility for if he does more. And if he does more, the player asks himself these two questions. Is it worth it? Like, is what I'm trying to do worth what I'm doing? And crucially, is the cost worth it? Is it worth giving up these social aspects to be better at the game? Is it worth grinding a bit extra, even if it's going to make me a bit more mentally fraught and a bit less sort of relaxed, to be even better at the game? Is it worth practicing under difficult circumstances so that when you're in difficult circumstances on stage, you feel more comfortable or it doesn't throw you for a loop? Who knows? These are all questions you have to answer. And quite frankly, depends how much you care about the outputs of your career, the success and the trophies and where you get to, or how much you care about the experience and the journey of your career and what each day was like and what the experience was like and what the physical implications were. Because I would just say it has to be a personal decision. For the team, I think what you do is you make it a team culture idea that we work hard and we work to a certain degree and we work diligently, but only to these amount of hours. And then, yes, obviously, if you hire the right people with a good ethic, maybe they get a little group going and maybe they encourage each other just like gym buddies and maybe they work even harder. Maybe in our team, we just have good leaders who drive people and motivate people and make them want to practice more or practice a lot and lead by example. And then other people want to join in and start doing it, like those stories of Kobe when he was with the Dream Team, right, doing all the workouts in the gym. Then, how about this angle? Do you want to prove that you can work smarter than other people? Just do it, mate. You don't need to brag. Just do it and win. If you win, by the way, and your methods work, not only will your players proselytize for you in every interview, every time they win a championship, but more importantly, they'll go to other teams and take the word there and they'll start to adopt it. And people will copy. This is a follower industry. People just copy other people. So if you're doing something that works, they'll start to copy you and it'll start to work for them too. So I would suggest no one's found a way to work smarter at the moment. That's just the way you trick people into making you think you as a Western sports psych slash performance director type person are doing something so that they necessitate keeping paying you and giving you power and influence. But then you just get tooled by the amazing Korean or Chinese team who's working way harder in the old school fashion, just with a bit of elbow grease and with their nose to the grindstone, just old fashioned hard work. And that's what they're doing. They've got a very high pressure culture, quite frankly. I think this is an enormous topic that does not get discussed. I mean, I've only just touched on some of these aspects here myself. It's only discussed, quite frankly, without application to results. And be very wary of someone in a performance industry who wants you to do something, but then acts like the outcome of the results don't matter. Because it's more like the spiritual sentiment of like, but I didn't work too hard. I didn't burn them up. What were the results, though? It's a results industry, so what were the results? How was what you did conducive to the way that player or team needs to perform? Now, if you want to watch people's careers and see how they do with their different practice methods, you can actually earn money back on esports bet, as that silver block told you at the beginning, right? They've got their watch to earn scheme where you can earn 1% back on your bets. Check out the website esportsbet.io for more details.
I'm Device from Astralis and welcome to Foreign's YouTube channel. It's a joke-free zone.
The Beatles said they get by with a little help from their friends, but I get by with a little help from my Patreon community. And this video was kindly supported by Matt Pugnaccio-Racula, Ahmed Haju, Bot Pounder 420, Toucan, Animosity, Tobias Bernasconi, Jensen Gore, Tosh, and a special thanks always goes out to my main man, Jerky's Minion. Would you like to ask me a question in my monthly video AMA? Do you want teasers to find out who are the upcoming guests? Maybe you want to take part in one of those lengthy but intense esports discussions I have with my donators, or maybe you want to suggest a guest or a topic that I could cover. Well, if any of those tickle your fancy, put your money where your mouth is and join the Skrilluminati today, where in the description box below there is a Patreon link.